welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston in the attic here this week, and I believe, let me turn around. Yeah, my dog, my puppy dog, Trixie, is joining me here this time around. She didn't want to leave before I started recording, so I said, all right, we're going to go with it. Let's see if you can be a good one and just kind of lay there. But she's, like me, kind of vocal, so we'll see if we can get through this. Hey, what do you know? A study released by Yale University shows the saving of lives and the saving of money both increases more than previous research has shown if, and only if, we enacted a Medicare for All program here in the United States. Shocking, I know. According to the study, as reported by Jessica Corbett of Common Dreams, a Medicare for All system in the United States would result in a reduction of over $1 billion in health spending per year. And that's in terms of administrative costs or pharmaceutical prices, avoidable emergency care, and fraudulent billing. But here's the other main point. A Med-for-All system would save up to 114,000 lives annually. Kind of like a pro-life message, a pro-life program, right? Now, I know, according to some, that, you know, I'm not the brightest bulb in the room, but I don't know, this is just me, but I'd rather support candidates who like to bring a Medicare for All system here in this country that helps the country save money, and more importantly, helps save the lives of thousands of Americans. But thanks to the Trump regimes and the MAGA Republican Congress's so-called Big Beautiful Bill from last year, which I will forever refer to as the MAGA murder budget, it's estimated by the Congressional Budget Office that some 15 million working-class Americans could lose their health insurance over the next decade. Why? Because of massive cuts to Medicaid. Which, of course, is thanks to cuts by the MAGA Republican Congress and the Trump regime's MAGA murder budget. Another reason for those high projections is, of course, because of Obamacare tax credit extensions being cut off by MAGA Republicans. Oh, and then there's this. Don't forget, the MAGA murder budget is adding over $3 trillion to the nation's debt so that we could shower corporations, dear leader Trump, and the entire Epstein class with more tax cuts. Remember, though, we're always told that MAGA Republicans are the real fiscal conservatives. Chew on that little tidbit while I remind you how Gas Buddies Patrick DeHaan reported today that the national average for a gallon of gasoline is over $4, $4 for the third time this year. Now, the Iran war is a reason for this, and so is the Trump regime's following of Israel's demand to keep the war going, which has also cost U.S. working class taxpayers over $100 billion so far. But with the MAGA murder budget's tax cuts designed to help corporations save on research and development, certainly those savings will trickle down the Epstein class's leg and drip on all of us here, all the little people's heads, right? Not feeling anything just yet. Tell me how that's working out for everyone, all right? MAGA Republicans, tell me how that bill is really helping us. Now, let's get back to the Medicaid cuts from the MAGA murder budget again, because due to projected cuts from that bill, Michigan hospitals stand to lose out on more than $6 billion for the next 10 years. So let's see, $100 billion for a war on Iran, which nobody wanted and nobody campaigned on, or more funding to keep hospitals, many of them rural hospitals, afloat. What does the working class want? Silly people. We don't matter to the elite and the untouchable Epstein class, who is represented fully by the Trump regime. They don't care about us. For example, thanks to the MAGA murder budget, a hospital in Sturgis, Michigan, in the south central part of the state, near the Indiana border, closed after a century of service. Not only does that hurt the people who need care in that area, but 300 jobs were also lost. Oh, but don't worry, everyone. Don't worry. We gave lots of tax breaks in the state to ensure that we'd have AI data centers that create very few permanent jobs. Hey, come on now. Take the good with the bad. I mean, just accept it. The big tech bro authoritarians get richer and they get more control of our lives. That's not what you wanted? Oh, come on. I think it is. For those working class Michiganders losing their hospital in Sturgis, the closest ambulance ride to a hospital now will tally around 20 to 25 minutes, and I am sure it won't cost that much for that ride either. University of North Carolina researchers are predicting three more rural hospitals will close in Michigan, including U of M Health Sparrow in Carson and Ascension Borges Lee in Dowagiac, and also in my neck of the woods, McLean Central Michigan in Mount Pleasant. WDIV Channel 4 News in Detroit's Nick Monticelli recently interviewed Michael Shepard. He's a professor of health management and policy at the University of Michigan last month, and he asked Dr. Shepard how many rural hospitals could close in Michigan over the next decade. Listen to the doctor's answer.
How many do you think are, you know, could close in the next 5 to 10 years?
There are about a dozen hospitals that are in various degrees of rough shape financially. The three that you mentioned outside of the Sturgis Hospital would have been the ones that coming into this year I would have said would be in the most jeopardy.
A dozen hospitals could close in 10 years, and many of them in rural areas across the state. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Perhaps, you know, Michigan's MAGA Republican congressional delegation, you know, who voted for this could explain to their voters how in the hell higher cost, how in the hell fewer hospitals, how in the hell losing coverage is so much better and so much preferred than providing the working class with a safety net of coverage with lower costs in the long run. Saying socialism doesn't change the fact that the current system is broken. Yeah, maybe you pay a little more in taxes to save long-term money and get better care. And yeah, maybe that means cutting back on Middle Eastern wars and corporate welfare for the tech bros and oil and gas companies. I mean, this is all about priorities, right? And MAGA Michigan Republicans in Congress, and I'm talking to you, Lisa McLean, John Molinar, Jack Bergman, Tim Walberg, Bill Huizenga, Tom Barrett, and yes, John James, who is now the Republican nominee for governor in the state. Yeah, I'm talking to you guys since you all showed your ass by voting for Trump's MAGA murder budget. And they showed all of us who and what they prioritize. And it's not us, the working class in this state. I mean, this is where we are. It's never about the working class in this state. And now, thanks to their governance, a good portion of the state is experiencing explosive diarrhea. If that's not symbolism of their leadership, I don't know what is. LeftofLansing@gmail.com is my email. Remember to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening and make sure to give us a good 5-star review. Sign up for the show on our Patreon page as well, and that's where you'll start to get some free content that's just not available here in the pod. But if you would like to leave yours truly with a little $5 donation, I won't fight you. And we'd appreciate it if you let others know of the show and share some episodes or clips or our Monday musings or Friday shorts with others as well. This is the best way to get the message out, the progressive message out to as many out there as possible. And of course, we also want you subscribing to the show on YouTube because subscriptions are important. So thanks again for listening to another episode here this week. Coming up, our dear friend and progressive and union fighter from Livingston County, Casey Helton, returns to talk to us about the big wins for Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed and for progressive William Lawrence, who won Casey's 7th Congressional District seat last week. In fact, William appeared, I saw in the news this week, with his former moderate opponents, Bridget Brink and Matt Mosdum, for a unity event over the weekend to show their support for Will's campaign, and that is awesome. So we'll talk about that and what needs to be communicated and pushed by progressives and Democrats and the working class in this midterm election here in just a moment. I need to bring this up because we've got an important Senate race, of course, coming up in Michigan between the progressive Democratic nominee, the aforementioned Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, and corporate AIPAC stooge and Trump water boy, Florida Mike Rogers. And I am so happy and I'm so thrilled that we're going to be talking about policies and the direction each campaign and candidate would like to take us here in Michigan. In fact, here was Florida Mike Rogers this week on Fox News talking about those very issues.
You can almost hear a collective gasp across Michigan for all the things he spends time hating on. I mean, when I go back, I want to, you know, make sure we're protecting our faith and our families and our factories and our freedoms Well, he's advocating doing away with our fireworks, football, the 4th of July. This guy spent hours hating on what most Michiganders would enjoy in their pastimes, and he should be held to account for that.
Oh, wait, you thought we were going to talk about the policies in this election? You thought that Florida Mike Rogers and the MAGA media machine really wanted to talk about how to help the working class? No, we're going to instead talk about how you aren't a real American if you say anything critical about our dear football. It's just so funny because, hell, every freaking Monday morning, most of America is complaining about football. Either their team lost, or the ref sucks, or the coach sucks, or the owner sucks, or the draft sucks, or tickets are overpriced, that sucks, or parking is overpriced and sucks, or new stadiums shouldn't be financed by U.S. taxpayers, or Aaron Rodgers sucks, or Rory the Lion sucks. Okay, actually, I've never heard anyone say really anything critical about Rory, the Detroit Lion mascot, but the point stands. But because Dr. Abdul says there's an issue of toxic masculinity in football, we're going to lose our collective minds. What, have I not been around here for most of my life? I mean, there have been hazing incidents in football, right? Or what about issues of playing through pain? I mean, that is a hallmark of football. And we've seen some former players deal with the consequences of CTE because they had to play through the pain. And because of that, football is losing some younger players who are choosing other sports that don't require as much contact. And I think soccer's been benefiting. Why do you think so many safety measures have been added in football over the last 10 to 15 years? Look, I'm a huge football fan, and yes, I understand these guys are beating up their bodies for my escapist entertainment, which is why I'm always on the player's side when it comes to collective bargaining, or why I'm glad that college players are finally getting compensated, although I do believe college football desperately needs a commissioner, but I digress. However, for Florida Mike Rogers to blatantly lie and say that Dr. Abdul wants to ban football because Dr. Abdul pointed out what I felt like was sort of a known fact that, you know, there are some players who exhibit toxic masculinity or at least are taught to be that way. How's that controversial? That's a well-known fact. I guess I'm missing out on the supposed controversy here. Dr. Abdul tweeted at Florida Mike Rogers with the following, "Since you're too afraid to debate me, how about you hold me accountable on the football field instead? Tackle, no pads like we used to play when we were kids. I'd be happy to show you how much I love football." Now, this is why Dr. Abdul resonates on so many levels with working class Michiganders. He fights back, and he can do it by being funny. Something tells me Florida Mike Rogers won't accept this challenge because, hey, that's what bullies do when they receive a little pushback. Even more telling was how many of the MAGA cult on social media like had this collective hyperventilation at Dr. Abdul's clapback to Florida Mike. I mean, many were complaining that Dr. Abdul immediately needs to resort to violence, which, of course, that's what these white Christian nationalists are saying, these MAGA people are saying, because they want you to fear the Muslim man. But at the same time, while complaining that he supposedly hates our dear football, they simultaneously complain that he's too much in their faces. So he's weak, but he's over-aggressive. Don't try to make sense of the senseless MAGA mind. It's a losing cause. And then, of course, they're trying to say that Dr. Abdul hates the 4th of July because apparently on some podcast years ago, he said that maybe fireworks just ain't worth it. I mean, fireworks freak the hell out of my dogs, and it's not so much of a great time for them, which means not so much of a great time for us. I'm not against big fireworks shows or anything like that, but am I suddenly unpatriotic because I don't want my neighbors lighting off loud-ass fireworks after 11 p.m.? I don't think he ever called for the ending of Independence Day. I don't think he was ever calling for a ban on fireworks or declared that the 4th of July is some awful holiday. He didn't do any of that. And then there was that old video that was shared over the weekend way back in 2018 when Dr. Abdul was running for governor. And you can hear him saying on the video how he hates Mackinac, as in Mackinac Island. Now, he's in a suit and is obviously there for that horrific Mackinac Economic Policy Conference, which is nothing more than a corporate hand job for all the political power players in Lansing. So, to me, I think he's talking about the conference. But, you know, regardless, what if he did say that he really didn't like Mackinac Island all that much? I visited Mackinac Island once, and I don't know, I guess I was a little underwhelmed by it. The movie Somewhere in Time, you remember that movie from 1980 with Christopher Reeve and Oh, in James Bond, she played Miss Solitaire. Dr. Quinn, medicine woman. Jane Seymour with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. That movie always made Mackinac Island look maybe more idyllic than it really is. And it could be. It really could be. But it's such a tourist trap. And in my opinion, there are just better places to see around Michigan and up north. I don't think I'm the only one with that opinion, though. So why are MAGA Republicans talking about some of these statements and not about policies? Because Dear Leader Trump's poll numbers are tanking, and working class Michiganders are demanding real working class fighters to be their voices in Washington and in Lansing to provide real working class solutions. Now, I just talked about how the big, beautiful bill or the MAGA murder budget is hurting us in terms of less health care coverage, more expensive health care coverage, and hospitals closing down. You think Florida Mike Rogers wants to not only talk about that, let alone have a real solution to the MAGA murder budget, a real solution to reopening hospitals? You think Florida Mike Rogers has given that issue some serious thought? Really? This is the same guy who claimed that any of us who dare criticize Dear Leader's economic agenda were all, quote, nuts. Yeah, he's got his finger on the pulse, the ear to the ground of what working class Michiganders are going through. Recall, this is the same guy who took thousands of dollars of prescription drug makers and pharmaceutical donor cash so that way he would introduce bills relaxing rules and regulations pertaining to opiates. And on top of that, he would have to also give speeches and make plenty of appearances on behalf of allowing this country to give more opiates to the people. Since 2001, some 30,000 Michiganders died from overdosing on opiates. Nearly 30,000. We're talking fathers, mothers, kids, grandkids, friends. Many died because of actions taken by Florida Mike Rogers. So let's see. This is like an SAT question, everyone. Who's done more harm to Michiganders? Florida Mike Rogers or someone like Hassan Piker? Florida Mike's campaign last year released an image of he and Dear Leader Trump giving the thumbs up sign after Dear Leader endorsed Mike Rogers. Remember, Florida Mike was once critical of Dear Leader Trump, but now he kisses Trump's ass or licks Trump's boots, as Dr. Abdullah has described it. So here's my tagline for the Florida Mike Rogers campaign. Let's see if it resonates with many of you out there. Mike Rogers, fighting for Trump's economy, fighting for Trump's tariffs, fighting for Trump's ICE Gestapo, fighting for big tech data centers, fighting for more opiate deaths, fighting for AIPAC, and fighting to protect the billionaire pedophiles in the Epstein files. Mike Rogers for the Senate. Yeah, I'd love to know how that message is going to resonate with many working class Michiganders. I can't wait to see. Coming up, Casey Helton. You're listening to LOL.
Helping push a strong progressive message from Kalkaska to Kalamazoo, from Monroe to Marquette, from Detroit to DeWitt, from Trenton to Traverse City. Okay, Pat, I think they get the idea. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Show archives are available wherever you're listening to the show. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free. And check out Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
All right, you know, after last week's progressive victories, especially Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed's Democratic Senate primary win and William Lawrence's convincing win in the 7th Congressional District, I just had to talk with our strong progressive and union voice from Livingston County, Casey Helton. And I have to tell you, we first started talking with Casey back in 2023, the summer of 2023. So it's been 3 years already that she's been making appearances here on the show. And in fact, Casey is making her 7th appearance on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. That is a record. So it is my pleasure to welcome back the always energetic, effervescent, opinionated, thoughtful, funny, the laborious, since she never seems to stop being out there and fighting the good fight. And most importantly, an overall good egg. Casey Helton, thanks so much for coming back here this week. We appreciate it.
Pat, thank you so much. You are too kind. It is always a pleasure to be on your show. And I love coming back every single time to talk to you. And, you know, you and I share ideas about this ever-changing, incredible political time that we live in out here in Michigan. I love talking to you about it. So thank you for having me.
And it is ever-changing because it feels like it was already, you know, years ago since we were sharing some of our disappointments and frustrations over the losses back in 2024. But what a difference, you know, but what 18, 19 months can make.
It's been a journey, right?
It has been. It has been. How are you feeling a week after the primary wins for, of course, Dr. Abdul and William Lawrence in your 7th congressional district there?
You know, I am so thrilled. The election, I work eve shift. I'm a hospital worker, so I work eve. So I'm usually up until like 2 a.m. That's not unusual, but I stayed up pretty much till 4 that night because it was so close. It was a real barn burner. And unfortunately, I had nobody to like, I had to keep it down because everyone was sleeping in my house. But, you know, when those results started coming in at night, all the work that was put into this, I have done canvassing for both Abdul and for William Lawrence. I have done social media events. I'm like a volunteer on the creative collaborators for Abdul on, you know, on social media. Nobody's paid. We all do this out of our own feelings of support for him as a candidate. I just couldn't stop thinking that night that Will, I met Will very early on in his campaign. He came to me. I'm friends with Sam Englert, who was a former head of Progress Michigan, and Sam had reached out to me and asked if I wanted to meet Will for coffee. We met in Brighton and we talked all about Livingston County. He gave me a good hour to really share the views of working people out here and what their struggles are. And I was so impressed with him. But to be totally honest with you, like, I wasn't sure somebody this progressive, having considered that, you know, Senator Slotkin once held that seat and she's very, you know, moderate, that he would have a chance. So to see him rise up the way that he did and to run this kind of unprecedented campaign that he ran that was so people oriented was just, gave me feelings I haven't had in a long time since the beginning of this second Trump term. So it was fantastic. It really was.
Did you think, Casey, that it would be closer, like Will's race was going to be the close one and Dr. Abdul's was going to be not a 15-point win. I never thought that was, I didn't really believe in those polls whatsoever, but that maybe it would be, I don't know, 3 to 6 points. That's kind of where I went into it. I was thinking,
considering it was like a 3-way primary.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I really did. I mean, you could be forgiven if you kind of thought the inverse would have happened because you had two moderates that were running there, Bridget Brink and Matt Masdom, who were basically, they didn't have a whole lot of differential views. And I think ultimately that was one of the things that was their kind of demise.
Agreed.
But you would think one of them, if we're such a moderate, like all the pundits say, if we're such a moderate congressional district where moderates are going to decide everything, and also we're out of school, right? So the students can't show up in the numbers that would be needed. You'd think one of them would have risen up, but really it was the opposite. You know, they were taking jabs at each other that whole race. And meanwhile, Will was just pounding the pavement.
Casey, not to interrupt you, do you think that was in part, I don't know, some Democratic consultants really didn't believe Williams' message was connecting? And so they thought, oh, well, we just have to focus on the other so-called moderate in the race and not really Will.
Yeah, well, I think that that's probably part of it. I think that the professional, like political chattering class of pundits and consultants, they don't live out here. They don't know the unique makeup of Livingston County, Ingham County, all these areas that make up the 7th Congressional District. I trust the people who live, their lived experience is what informs their support. And I know that affordability is an issue. I canvassed for William Lawrence multiple times in Livingston County. I was part of the canvassing team. And when you're starting to hear affordability issues every door you go to in a place like Livingston County that is considered upper middle class, there is something that is resonating there. That was my experience. You don't normally hear people in my neck of the woods, where we have a relatively low rate of poverty out here, relatively low rate of people on public assistance, talking about the affordability of gas, the affordability of groceries, wages. These are those issues. And that is what Will's campaign was all about. It was a positive campaign. I didn't hear much. I don't want to relitigate the other two candidates. They have firmly thrown their support behind Will, and I very much appreciate them for doing that. But I've tracked their messaging, and it wasn't as focused on that. And then also data centers. Ugh, I can't even tell you like how much I think that made a difference as well out here. He was at those meetings, those town halls. I think that helped him too.
I do too. I want to go back, if you don't mind. You talked about how you got to meet with Will early on in his campaign, and he connected with you to talk about Livingston County. What did you tell him about Livingston County?
I think part of the reason he reached out to me is because I think he knew that I am involved in union leadership. I'm a steward with SEIU Healthcare Michigan, where I work at Michigan Medicine. And I think he trusted that a person involved in unions would know about what working people were going through out here. We talked about how this is kind of a rough area to do outreach on politically. That's if you're not like a hardline Republican, because I'm sure people know that Livingston County is a very traditionally conservative county.
Right.
And do I think that William Lawrence is going to like win Livingston County in the general? That would be quite a feat. I would you would knock me over with the but you know what? I ashamed to admit, but I wasn't quite sure he was going to make it in the primary. Who knows? But we did. That was part of the reason we did get together, is because we did talk about the fact that, and this was before the tariffs. This was, I think, before, it might have been just before that or around that time with the Trump tariffs and everything, where things really started getting bad. It was definitely before the Strait of Hormuz and the Iran war. And we did talk about how affordability is the message, I think, that you can use to get maybe not your hardline MAGA like people who are just kind of sadly, I think, brainwashed, but your disaffected Republicans. Because I'll tell you what, Tom Barrett's not talking about that. Mm-hmm. He's running away from that issue, just like he is every other issue.
Right.
I think if anyone can message on that, Will can. I think he has proven himself. I've watched his campaign so closely, and time again, he has proven himself to be so on message. And same with Abdul. That's the one thing him and Abdul really have in common. And so I don't think it's a coincidence they were able to take victory in this primary in Livingston County.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, too, because I remember like one of the first times having you on, we were talking about the fight was to try at least to get Livingston a bit more on the purple side. And that was back in 2023, Casey. And now here we are 3 years later. And these two progressives, self-professed progressives, working class progressives, they won the county. I mean, at least in the Democratic primary, which, you know, I don't think that happens 3 years ago.
Yeah. And if I can share this a little bit, Pat, I want to say my views on this have changed a little bit. This whole idea of like the purple state. I've done a lot of thinking about this. And in fact, yesterday, our union had a picnic out in Wixom at Proud Lake. And I was talking to one of the executive officers for SEIU Michigan who was there. And we were talking about this very issue. How do we win these purple voters? And I expressed to him that I do not necessarily think Michigan is a purple state so much as we are like a state like that's receptive to populist messaging, right?
Yes.
And people who would argue with that, I would say, well, how did Trump manage to win Michigan twice if he is not a voice of moderation?
You know what no.
I mean? I don't think anybody would call him that. So he ran on a right-wing populist platform.
Went after NAFTA, for instance.
Yes, yes. He went after NAFTA, you know, and there are a lot of criticisms to be made of NAFTA. I am not on a baseline. I'm going to agree with that position. NAFTA has destroyed the Rust Belt, including Michigan, in many ways. And that was under a Democratic president, Bill Clinton. So that criticism is warranted. But and then also immigration. He would attack immigrants on the basis of them taking your jobs and this lie that immigrants are criminals, which I think all of America, thanks to ICE completely showing their backside on camera on a daily basis, we know that's not the case. But there is a left side populist message that can counter that. And I told this to my officer yesterday. I won't name him, but he's a good guy, kind of high up in SEIU. And I told him, like, SEIU has this theory, and they do this a lot with their union organizing, where they reach out to immigrant workers nationwide and they try to organize them. Why do they do that? Because when you can raise the standard of living for immigrant workers, that's a rising tide that's going to lift all boats. One of the reasons why wages are so suppressed in this country is because we have this influx of cheap labor. the answer to that is not to deport grandma off to a foreign country where she's not even from, or, you know, violently assault them in their front yard. The answer is to give them more rights so that we can in turn build a broad-based coalition of the working class, right? That includes all races, all nationalities. So that's like a left-wing populist message. And I think perhaps unions have been, some unions have been, I don't want to say they've been shy about it, because they, some of them, I think some locals are more open to promoting this than others. I don't know. I'm just speaking for myself here, like my observations. But that type of messaging, I think, would resonate out in a place like Michigan. It's about framing, right, is what I'm trying to say here. You know what I mean? It's about, we're a populist receptive state. We voted for Bernie Sanders out here. So obviously people are receptive to that message. It's how you frame that message that really matters. And I think someone like Abdul and William are just, they're crushing it on that level. They really are.
No, they are. And one thing that I've been really hammering, I think, the last couple of months that I've loved about both their campaigns and other working class progressives who are running across the state, I think they nailed everything right on the head, because they were feeling where the working class in the state is right now. And you've already mentioned it with data centers, the frustration of not being heard from political leaders when it comes to data centers, money in politics in general. That I believe, Casey, that's what we were seeing maybe more than anything else. If there's a message that ran through both, I think, Dr. Abdul and William Lawrence's and Donovan McKinney's and many others, one line that was constant was money in politics.
And absolutely.
I think there's a message that they must continue going into the general election.
100%. Yes. We are so much better informed, I think, than previous generations because of the internet. People are starting to really develop a sophistication about understanding how the sausage is made in Washington, right? And they know that they're being ignored. People are not stupid about this. They know when they're not being listened to. And that is the thing, I think, that Abdul and William and Donovan McKinney, I met Donovan McKinney at an event in Detroit. It was a utility. Our union participated in it, and it was called The Bills Are Too Damn High. And yeah. Donovan McKinney was there, and Stephanie Chang. Yes, she was there. A bunch of reps were there. And we all talked about the affordability issue on utilities and DTE. And, you know, those guys, they were in there just intermixing with the people. I think that's something that they did that regularly. People want to know their congressperson or their rep is accessible to them. And these candidates were. You know, they know who's fighting for them.
Absolutely. And that's why that's why I'm really hoping that they continue to pound that message.
And they're and they're not taking those corporate dollars. They're not taking those AIPAC dollars. And it's working. It's working. Yeah. These consultants in Washington and the political infrastructure, they need to start paying attention to us and to what we're saying.
Since you just mentioned it, I read this article in the Washington Monthly over the weekend, and the writer I talked about on my Monday musing this week, so everybody check that out. I don't know if you missed it, but their big argument was that Dr. Abdul has to stop talking about Israel because it's such a divisive issue. He's got to stop talking. Yet there he goes on Meet the Press, and what are the first three questions they ask him? Israel, Israel, Israel. And this writer was saying, you've got to stop talking about AIPAC. Nobody really knows what it is. Well, just because they don't know what it, maybe some don't know what it is, doesn't mean you don't talk about it, because it's so easy to connect. And I think that's why he is connecting with so many voters, because they can see, wait, AIPAC is giving all this money to Florida Mike Rogers, let's say, who backs the Iran war. Hey, my gas prices are high. It's not hard to connect all of those dots. And I think the voters, I think we're smart enough and intelligent enough to kind of get that.
Yeah, we don't need to be Harvard educated political scientists to draw these lines between how these politicians vote and who's paying them. And the fact that, you know, these Republican senators and congressmen, for heaven's sakes, like, we got a dead guy that's in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, yeah. I am going to stand by this. I'm going to say it right now. Mitch McConnell is dead, everyone. He's dead. Okay. And Trump's on there talking about today that he just gave a speech where he's talking about how somebody had asked a DSA candidate, do they want to abolish the Senate? I think it was Chris Rabb. And and Trump spoke about that. He said, oh, yeah, there are days I would like to abolish the Senate, but I don't say that. I said, you would never abolish the Senate under the, you've got a dead guy sitting in that chair right now. And you're going to abolish the Senate? You love the Senate. They're just a bunch of rubber stamps doing whatever bidding you want them to do. And that's what these congressmen are, these Republican congressmen, these Republican senators. They're bought votes. They're bought. All you have to do is look around and live in the world, Pat, and you know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And people are tired of it. And I think that it would be a mistake for Abdul to stop talking about AIPAC, because why would he stop talking about AIPAC when AIPAC just came out and said, oh, yeah, well, we're going to throw, you know, millions of dollars at your opponent now. Why? Why are you doing right. that? You are a foreign interest lobby, unregistered, by the way. You don't have to do that, of course. Why would he not bring that up? It's got to stop. It's out of control.
Yeah, I'm just going to say you were right, because earlier you talked about how William Lawrence's former opponents, Bridget Brink and Matt Mosdom, they both have come together with Will, and then they said they were going to back him.
Definitely and necessary. I mean, we have to do this, and we don't have a lot of time. I trust the people. I do. I trust the people. Well, I think we all know what's at stake here.
Absolutely. And I was just going to say, don't want to relitigate everything. It is done. Our guys mm-hmm. won, so that's good. So we're yeah. happy. Not trying to be poor winners or anything like that. And good on Haley Stevens for yeah. also coming out and endorsing. Very, very good on her. I think, though, just getting back quickly to the AIPAC spending, that's where some of my frustration has always been. Going back to that primary, I kept on saying, look, yeah, AIPAC is going to spend on some Democrats that it thinks will get the votes. But guess what? If the Democrats they're backing don't win, they're going to flip real quick and go to the Republicans just like that. And in fact, they probably always want more Republicans than Democrats now, especially with right. the Democratic Party and the Democratic electorate changing its views very quickly with Israel. So why take money from an organization, from a PAC that doesn't like Democrats in the first place? That is my frustration. That's why I'm with you.
Let me give you some hope. I think that the next round of primary elections, when we do this all over again in 2 years or what have you, not for Michigan, but, you know, one of these other swing states, Michigan was the nail in the coffin for AIPAC. How much money did they spend? $50 million on this race and with Abdul? Is that where it was?
Yeah.
All down the drain. They know this does not work for them. They are only going to get more unpopular once Abdul gets into the Senate. And they're done here. The house is dropped on AIPAC. Michigan. You know, the witch is dead. I think there's stranglehold out here. I don't see that increasing. I see it decreasing. I see it waning. I think we should all have hope around that we're going to become the real here in Michigan. We're going to become the real party of America First in that sense, in the good way, where we're putting our healthcare interests first, our children and their educations first. We're going to put workers' rights first. We're going to put money in people's pockets. Like Dr. Abdul says, those are going to become the issues that matter to people. And I think as we start seeing those results come out, some of the doubters, I sound like such a like an Abdul believer here. But I am. I really am. I think that we are going to see some changing tides in bringing more people power to the Senate in Michigan and to Congress with William Lawrence.
I'm still just wondering, despite what these early polls are showing or whatever, I'm still wondering, how does somebody like a Congressman Tom Barrett, who William Lawrence will be facing, or how does a Florida Mike Rogers, who will be facing Dr. Abdul, how do they argue, A, that everything is great, B, that data centers rock, and C, yeah, it's okay that we take some AIPAC money or other questionable
money. I hope they do,
money.
Pat. I hope they do. Let's get this argument settled in debates. What is Abdul challenge Mike Rogers? I think it's like seven. Is it seven
like
debates?
That. Five or seven.
That?
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see if he meets them on that. I mean, or is his campaign tactic just going to be like more ridiculous AI videos?
Probably.
You know, bashing Abdul is just the most insane thing I've ever seen. You know, people are angry about data centers. What am I going to do if I'm Mike Rogers? I'm going to make an AI video of, you know, just what are we doing? What are we doing, Mike Rogers? But I hope they do try to make all those arguments, because people will see that these men are frauds. Tom Barrett is a fraud. Mike Rogers is a fraud. I can tell you, Mike Rogers is from our community. He's before he moved off to Florida, he's from neighboring Genoa Township, which is the township right next door to me. That man took money from opioid pharmaceuticals to the point where the statistics played out where opioid prescriptions went up so much during his time in Congress that there was one opioid prescription for every resident in Livingston County at the peak of the opioid epidemic. That was the statistical play out of how many there were. I think like a 30% increase in deaths. It was horrible. It was horrible. So these are things that people remember out here. And I don't think, for people who are worried about the MAGA vote, Trump is not on the ballot in this midterm, right?
And also his approval ratings are horrid.
Oh, it's in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're not going to see a lot of these MAGA voters only turn out when Trump is on the ballot. And we'll see if they will now that he's not going to be on the ballot. I don't know if the enthusiasm is there. I think we're all going to be rather blown away by the enthusiasm gap of MAGA voters. Well, I think it's going to be a washout. I don't think it is. I think it's going to be close. Mm-hmm. But we all have to do our part. And I know I will be. I will be doing the canvassing and going on your show and doing my social media influencing so that the word is out on these frauds, Tom Barrett and Mike Rogers.
Casey, if somebody is listening and maybe they're not from this just the 7th district, maybe they're wherever, but they want to help out some Democrats that are in their districts like you're going to do, like, can you tell them, maybe give them some advice? What would be the best way to reach out, or, you know, who should they contact?
Like in areas outside the district?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you that Abdul's social media is, I should have prepared this in advance, and I apologize. I'm a horrible influencer. But I can tell you, if you go to, let's see, Abdul for Senate, you can donate and you can also sign up. So if you go to abdulforsenate.com, there is a whole segment in there where you can sign up on his website to text bank, phone bank, or find your local canvassing group in your area. They are very, very well coordinated on that campaign. And I would encourage anybody who, maybe if you're not comfortable doing door-to-door canvassing, phone banking is a great thing you can just do from your couch. Your number's not going to be shown up on any screen. They give their software for this whole thing. It's very easy to do. Same with text banking. Most of these campaigns, they have, thanks to the internet, they do have very coordinated teams that come from their website. So I would say the first place is to go to your candidate's website and look at what they're doing, you know, to reach out to someone to get involved in whatever campaign of your choosing. Same for Will. Will is wewill2026.com for out here.
I'm going to try to make sure I get him on one more time here in the
fall. Oh, yeah, I'm sure he would love that. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
He's such a great guy. His interview, yeah. I saw his interview with you. He was fantastic.
Hey, real quick, do you think Barack Obama will endorse Dr. Abdul?
He better. Why wouldn't he? I'm just a lady sitting here on my couch telling a former president of the United States what to do. But I mean, come on. This is a no-brainer. Why would you not? Why would you not get in there and help? It pains me to say it, Pat, but we do need, I think, his support to specifically to resonate with urban areas where Haley did a little bit better.
Yeah, I would say like Saginaw counties and Genesee counties. I think that would help.
Yeah, he didn't do as bad in those communities, I think, right, as some people are saying. I think there I followed it. There was some great people on social media who supported him from the Black community, very strong leaders.
Yeah.
But I think that it's just an issue of getting the word out on what he wants to do in the state. And I think Barack Obama would help give that the rocket fuel that it needs.
All right. Last question. 3 months to go. Less than 3 months to go. Do you like having the primary in August, or would you like to have it earlier? What's your preference?
Oh, man. I think the amount of time we all spent bloodying each other up these last few months, even though we've had a like come to Jesus moment now, you know, where we've all gotten together to kumbaya, which is great and necessary. The longer it gets dragged out, the harder that is. And yes, I think right now where I'm standing on it, I think earlier would have been better. It certainly would have been a completely different type of campaign. I don't know if Mallory would have dropped out.
Probably
would have been a three-way.
If this would have been in May.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think she does.
And the convention was in April.
And remember, Casey, that he really, Dr. Abdul, really got his jump. What was that, in April? When he really,
yeah,
when
it was in April with Hassan Gate.
Hassan Gate. Yeah. Can't believe that's still being talked. But anyway, yeah.
Yes, I do think next time around, I'm leaning toward earlier.
Okay.
But like I said, what do I know? I'm just a lady on her couch.
No, you're not.
I'm on the couch today.
Maybe today.
And today's my relaxed day until I get a full day of work this week. So, yeah.
Casey, thank you again for being on. Can I get a promise from you that you'll maybe join us one more time before the election?
Of course.
All right.
My door is always open to you, Pat. I love talking with you. It's always fun.
Well, we always love having you on, Casey. Thanks again and take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you, Pat. Bye.
If you'd like to talk to Pat at any time, his email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to vent about the Trump regime? That's leftoflansing at gmail.com. Need to complain about stupidity in Lansing and in Washington, D.C.? That's leftoflansing at gmail.com. Want to debate which Great Lake is the best? That's leftoflansing at gmail.com. That one's a fun one. Bye.
Always awesome hearing from Casey Helton. I'll give you links to her socials wherever you are listening. And of course, I'll give links to William Lawrence's campaign and, yes, Dr. Abdul's campaign as well. And if I may, I didn't have time to go into it with Casey there at the end, but I have to say I like the primaries in August. I've said it before. I think we should have a longer fight for the future direction of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And then let's have a sprint to the finish. I like that a lot. Other civilized countries don't have election season as drawn out and as long as ours. I am all for the current system. What I am not about is how the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers just gave a green light to build that ridiculous tunnel around the Line 5 oil pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac. But you know what? It really doesn't matter since the Michigan Supreme Court ruled that the Michigan Public Service Commission's decision to green light the project is null and void. Remember, as our good friend and Line 5 expert Jeffrey Inscote has told us, the Canadian oil company Enbridge, which owns Line 5, doesn't really want to build the tunnel in the first place. It's all just one giant stall tactic to keep the oil flowing while still using that dangerous pipeline. And some corporate establishment Democrats, along with the corporate media, are now arguing how progressive Francesca Hong's loss to the establishment David Crowley in the Wisconsin Democratic governor's primary shows that Democrats have to rush to this undefined center, which means, I guess, corporate right, because that's where the center is nowadays. But what is interesting is that Ms. Hong lost by just a couple of thousands of votes. Just a couple of thousand votes. But when progressive Abdul El-Sayed won by 15,000 votes in Michigan Senate primary last week, the same people didn't say, well, you know, I guess this means Democrats have to keep moving to the working class progressive left. No, no, no. Don't hear that one bit. You heard that Dr. Abdul now has to reach over to the center. The job is to always crush any working class progressive movement. And we've got to always be aware of that. Like Bruce Hornsby said, that's just the way it is. Ah, but don't you believe them. Still, a progressive won the Senate primary for the Democrats in Minnesota, so that was great news. That means if we can get Dr. Abdul across the finish line here in Michigan, the Midwest, along with maybe Sherrod Brown in Ohio, might be sending three pro-America and pro-working-class voices in the U.S. Senate this year. I'm for that. Time now for the Left of Lansing, a weekly poll. Do you believe political TV ads still work as much today as they have in the past? Your answers are yes, no, or sometimes. Vote on our Twitter and YouTube pages and also on our Patreon page. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. I'd like to just spend a moment or two talking about the effectiveness of TV ads. And this is a subject that I recently covered with one of Dr. Abdul's volunteers in Saginaw, who's also our show voice, Jessica Shepherd. And I wanted to kind of ask her how it felt to see a 30-second TV ad, like the one that gave the impression that President Obama endorsed Haley Stevens, how she felt and how it had such a massive impact with many voters while she was out there door knocking and having many one-on-ones with voters. I was just trying to ask her how it felt to see how one ad could sway so many voters while she's out there talking one-on-one with people. And well, here was her answer.
Yeah, I mean, that can be a little disheartening, but also it pumps me up to get out there. I will say, yes, that Obama did endorse Haley Stevens in previous races and has not in this race. He has not endorsed anyone. And also, when it comes to the auto bailout thing, I always just think of how the UAW has endorsed Abdul. And then I think that's just such a weird stance to take because these auto workers are backing the other candidate. So yeah, it can be deeply disheartening to see ads do. But I really think there is an age gap here when it comes to the TV ads. I really do think older voters are more trusted, and that can be a beautiful thing, that they're more trusting of what they hear on television because they remember a time when there were rules, there were standards that were much different than we have now.
Like, are you talking like Walter Cronkite days, all that?
Yeah. Right. And so it seems to me from the voters I've talked to who are the most deeply concerned with these political ads, it seems to be older voters. Now, that also might be because they actually watch TV still. It seems like Gen Z especially does not even watch TV. But I have seen some of the ads pop up on YouTube, so maybe they are getting them.
I really didn't want to believe those ads could make an impact in the race, but they did. They did, by allowing Haley Stevens to almost walk away with the victory. That Obama ad, by the way, was backed by AIPAC, which leads me to ask this question again. Why is AIPAC, an Israeli-American lobbying PAC, so invested in Michigan's Senate race? Why is AIPAC backing Florida Mike Rogers in the Senate race? With all that money going up against Dr. Abdullah Syed, that's why his victory still remains one of the most remarkable victories in modern American political history. I also agree with Justin that TV ads still play a role in our elections and with our electorate, especially with older voters. They are the ones still watching TV. You remember Trump's anti-transgender ads about Democrats being about them and they, but Trump really cared about you. I mean, ridiculous, but and disgusting. However, they probably worked somewhat. Same with the Willie Horton ads during the Bush Dukakis election of 1988. If you weren't around then, those ads were about scaring white America that the Democratic nominee, Michael Dukakis, who was just like the centrist buffoon, that he was going to release violent criminals in the streets, aka black people in the streets, to terrorize white people. So when you hear all about the glory days of the Republican Party back in the 80s and 90s, no, Republicans were always, always MAGA. While new media and digital media, I think, has certainly made some huge strides, and while social media has done some good in informing many, like with the genocide in Gaza, TV ads still seem to be working on the edges. It's a sad commentary, but it's true. And while I, of course, don't want any of my candidates accepting corporate PAC money, maybe someone like William Lawrence, a progressive Democratic candidate for Michigan's 7th Congressional District, currently held by MAGA Republican Tom Barrett, maybe Will Lawrence is on the right track that, hey, he's going to have to accept some money on behalf of people that he doesn't always agree with in this election. He's not taking any PAC money, but he's saying it's going to happen that individuals that maybe he doesn't agree with all the time will be giving him money. And according to Michigan Advance, William Lawrence said that there's no purity in this. Winning a general election in a swing district, we've got to raise a lot of money. Well, that's the reality. I mean, that's something we have to accept as progressives in order to win for the progressive movement. It seems like Francesca Hong didn't have any real TV ads in Wisconsin. She only lost by a couple thousands of votes. Maybe an ad or two would have helped her out. While times certainly are a-changing, some things, sadly, and quite honestly, remain the same.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to our good friend Casey Helton for being on the show this week to add her wisdom and passion. You know, one way that we can help spread the progressive working class message is by sharing shows like this with others to let people know there's a way to make the political machine work for the people. And of course, there are so many other ways, like Casey implored all of us to do, helping phone bank for a campaign, donating to a campaign, door-to-door knocking, helping inform as many people as possible about, for instance, the Mop Up Michigan ballot initiative that would ban DTE from contributing to campaigns. You could also start a Facebook group for your community. There are a number of ways to do this. Just don't sit around and think you have no power, that you don't have the power to change things. Every little bit of effort helps. It doesn't hurt. Look at Casey, who fights for union causes and fought for Dr. Abdul and William Lawrence in her district. Or our beloved show voice Jessica, who was so proud when she was able to get assurances from people that she talked to while door knocking that they would vote for Dr. Abdul. That kind of work paid off while Dr. Abdul was being outspent 10-1. You know, I don't know why. Maybe it's because I've been rewatching The Bear on Hulu. But in season one, they featured John Mellencamp's 1987 hit called Check It Out. Yes, I'm showing my Gen X age right now. But there was always a line that hit me from that song more, I think, when I was in college and then subsequently as I got older and older. But in the last verse, John says, "A million young poets screaming out their words, hoping someday those words will be heard by future generations. And the highways that we built, I hope they'll have a better understanding." Maybe that line is resonating with me now more than ever as we attempt to finally make some real changes in order to help future generations. It's never going to be easy. Nobody said it was ever going to be easy. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.